Welcome back to the Picks and Picks podcast. We have the whole crew assembled here after another, we'll say, lackluster week. 3-4-3, just under a unit down, 0.8 units. Season total, back in the red, unfortunately, after a couple of rough weeks. 158, 152, and 14, minus 2.2 units. But the 2024 total, guys, still solid at 75, 60, and 9, plus 9.2 units. So we'll be looking in these last three match weeks to at least get that season total back into the green and close out, I guess, 2024 over 10 units up would be a nice way to close things out. Gets tricky these last few weeks because not everybody has everything to play for. I think we'll talk about that a little bit, maybe in some of our picks. Makes betting these games a little bit trickier, and you kind of got to look for value in different places. So what are you guys thinking? I mean, today's Tuesday. We normally record on Wednesday, so we don't have both finalists for the Champions League yet. But, I mean, we talked about Dortmund, and a down year for Dortmund domestically is turned into a potentially banner year internationally as they're into the Champions League final with a 1-0 win over PSG. I didn't get to watch the match. I saw PSG crying a little bit about their posts, over 3xG, little luck on Dortmund's side, but hey, sometimes you need luck.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to anybody that listened to the pod last week and took Dortmund plus 600 as their future. Because we said that's a nice little hedge play. You could take that with a one goal advantage. And if Dortmund hold on, now you have a plus 600 going into the final, and you can hedge pretty easily against whoever wins on Wednesday. You know, I'm assuming it's going to be Madrid, but either way, you're probably going to have at least a, you know, plus 200, plus 300 winner coming out of that.
Coach, you're drinking a White Claw?
Topo Chico.
Oh,
no.
I saw the stripe over here. Yeah,
I saw the stripe. I like it. Respect. I would have joined you. I think Scotty nailed it. Shout out to anybody that listened to the pod. This is like been my biggest in what is turning out to be not the greatest betting season for the pod here. This is what we could hang our hat on. We always perform in the Champions League. It is now the third straight year of pretty much nailing Champions League analysis. I'm going to have to do it this week and probably make like five or six just like 10 second audio clips of all the times we have been bashing PSG. Now, credit to them, they did make it to the semifinal. I mean, something to be said about that. But I thought they were frauds making it out of that group. I thought they got extremely lucky. They started to take care of business. But this is the time where PSG puts in that PSG performance. They're not built for this. Coach, you said you heard people saying it's unlucky. Well, it's not unlucky. You scored zero goals in two games. That's just a fucking fact. But shout out to the Champions League. This Champions League, I thought, start to finish, has been pretty entertaining. Group stage, I think, was pretty good. There were some good groups. The matchups, I thought, were pretty solid in the second round. Now, are some of these teams having down seasons? Yes, I think it's a down season for Bayern, a down season for Real, for Barcelona, for City, for whoever, right? Pick your team. But the matchups just played out well and in our favor to see those teams match up against each other. And, you know, it hit the point in the season for a lot of these teams where you have to go all in the Champions League. And that's kind of what they've done. You mentioned Dortmund, right? Nothing to write home about in Germany, but well, here they are. They're in the finals. PSG had their league locked up. Real tomorrow, they have the league locked up. Bayern can't do anything. They're pretty much solidified in what, second or third place. So it's basically all in. And for me, the last two stages of the knockout rounds have just been entertaining as hell. Mm-hmm. Way more goals than we're used to.
Yeah. And to your point, Nick, like saying it's kind of a down year for some of these teams. I mean, look at next year. I think next year it's basically be a Real Madrid versus City show, with Madrid presumably getting Mbappe. They're going to have an attacking four, if you call it, between him, Vinny, Rodrigo, and Bellingham, that is probably as good on paper as anything we've seen in the last 5 or 6 years. So I think they're going to be a pretty heavy favorite going into the next year. It's now, obviously, the format's a little different, but it's certainly a good time to kind of put it together like Dortmund did, and maybe, you know, squeeze one out before there could be a potential dominance between those two clubs over the next couple of years.
Sure.
Yeah. And we say down year and Real's still going to win the league, right? So it's like,
and probably, and could potentially win the Champions League. Yeah.
And win the Champions League. So they can have the double there.
I mean, when I said down year,
yeah,
I almost meant stylistically, right? Like, no,
you're right. They don't have a true nine right now. Like, they've been struggling. Like, you know, Vinny Jr. has been, you know, carrying the team offensively. Yeah. Rodrigo has actually had a pretty good season. Yeah. And then, you know, Bellingham in the first half of the season was creating goals like left and right. But, you know, they lost Benzema. They haven't really replaced him. They're going to get that in Mbappe. You know, I don't know if Mbappe's going to play on the wing like he has at PSG or more central, but presumably him and Vinny up top will be, you know, as good of a, you know, attacking duo that you'll see across, you know, all of Europe. And it'll be interesting. Like, I can't imagine, you know, Real really struggling through the first probably 6 months of the Champions League next year. And then, you know, once they get to the semis, maybe they run into City or Bayern that's playing well. But it's, you know, like I said, Dortmund's doing it at the right time. So,
yeah, I think I was being harsh on teams. Maybe the point I was trying to make was it was kind of anything goes once the second round started. Right. Like, there was nobody felt invincible. And we kind of saw that. We saw some upsets and we saw some teams who've been able to turn around their poor domestic form. So it's been good.
Yeah. Terrible campaign for the Premier League on top of that, which is what really these teams, I don't know if it points out some of maybe the overratedness of some of these Premier League teams when it's on the European stage, that, you know, they get a reputation for being almost invincible and then they go to Europe and they falter a bit.
I'll defend them in the sense that for any club, I don't care who you are, I don't care what league you're in, your first year in Champions League or in even Europa League, like, it's not easy, right? Teams, the Premier League does have the most money, so maybe the team should be a little more equipped to handle rotation and squad depth and things like that, but it's not a cakewalk, man. I mean, we joke about it when we were talking about our Europa League and our Conference League shows. Like, hey, man, go travel to Azerbaijan. Go travel to Eastern Europe on a cold Thursday night when it's fucking pouring rain and 1,000 Serbians have firecrackers at the throne at your head. Like, it's not easy. And teams, you know, you got to remember, in some instances, like, you're playing the best team from a typical, like a Greece, from a, I don't know, a Denmark, from a Belgium, like, not easy games.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, when you talk about the top teams in the other leagues too, they are equipped for the same kind of, you know, two front battles and the realities of the world. And maybe they, you know, lost some names in the last couple of years, but they're still built to compete. Yeah. And so is Barcelona, maybe not to the level they were of the Messi years and things like that. But those teams are still European heavyweights. Bayern's still a European heavyweight. You know, the Italian teams didn't perform like we thought either. So it wasn't just the Premier League. Look, Inter was
Germany overperformed. I think we gotta give them that. But man, I'm sorry. The other thing that I just wanted to say, like, think about the money. The money doesn't, you know, it's a ton that goes every win. You know, if you make it out of the group stage, it's X amount. If you get a win, it's X amount. If you're in the knockouts and you're getting wins, it's millions of dollars in prize money, right? That might not mean something to Arsenal or Aston Villa or, you know, whoever else is in from the Premier League. That means a whole hell of a lot to Olympiacos or, you know, Sparta Prague or a team like that. So that's really has to be taken into consideration. I feel like that's when teams and lines get vulnerable and whatever. We've done a pretty good job, but it's just, it's not as simple as saying, oh, the English teams are overrated. Like, yeah, okay. Do they have the media machine? Do they have the league money? Do they have the coverage? Do people want to see English teams play well? Yeah, I think they do. And I think it's probably better for the leagues overall, but I don't think it's that simple of an argument.
Yeah. The English teams are also very good at overspending on their money. So they're spending £100 million to bring in a midfielder that's maybe really good, world-class, but he's not twice as good as a £50 million player. So I think some of that, like, gets lost too.
I think you're spot the fuck on. Absolutely. There's what, 3 to 5 $100 million midfielders on the planet. And we see 3 to 5 transfers every year in the Premier League for that amount.
Yeah. Declan Rice.
Because they have the money, they spend the money, right? Whereas teams have to be a little bit more conscientious of how they're spending $100 million. Maybe their whole transfer budget's $100 million and they have to pick out 4 or 5 players, right?
Trickle down economics, you know? Yeah. You buy a player from Brazil for £5 million and you sell him to a Portuguese team for 15 million pounds, and then that Portuguese turns him into a Champions League player, and then they sell him for 75 million pounds. And all of a sudden, that revenue gets shifted into the Portuguese league.
Yeah. So speaking of the Premier League, a team that's kind of flown under the radar this year because they weren't in Europe, they had a really poor season last year, has been Chelsea. But right now, they're pretty much cooking under Pochettino. Six wins, five draws, one loss in their last 12 EPL games. 4-0 win over West Ham last weekend. And they're slowly creeping into contention for that last guaranteed European spot, sixth place in the Premier League, just 2 points behind Newcastle with three to play. I mean, you knew Pochettino would get them going at some point, right? It wasn't going to be immediate because he had a lot of fixing to do. I guess we could say, look at two things. Do they finish top six and guarantee a return to Europe, even if it's maybe Conference League or Europa League? And how does this play into next season?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're on track to do it. I mean, Newcastle, fortunately for them, have kind of picked it up in recent weeks. They were struggling, but Isak came back and has been scoring, you know, basically at will. And so that might be their saving grace, is that they started scoring goals again at the right time. But really, I mean, Chelsea, you could make a case that they're right now the second best team in London out of, you know, the six teams, seven teams you have there. Obviously, Arsenal are having a great season and are finishing strong. But you know, Aston Villa has kind of dropped off in a little bit in the last month or so. And Tottenham, of course, have had their struggles, just got, you know, absolutely destroyed by Poole over the weekend. So I think if you came up to me and said, yeah, like Chelsea right now are showing they're the second best team in Europe since the last international break, or not in Europe, in London since the last international break, I would probably have to agree with you, because it's, you know, they're scoring finally. Like we talked about how poor their finishing has been the first half of the season. They were like the XG antithesis, where they just created a bunch but couldn't finish. But, you know, they've kind of figured it out. And Cole Palmer has been, you know, crucial to that. I think Conor Gallagher has been playing really well. And then, you know, maybe most importantly, their midfield has really turned it around. You know, Caicedo has been playing to his level. You know, they brought him in for 100 million pounds and was, you know, took a while to adapt, but he's been playing pretty well lately. I don't know, again, if you want to call him a 100 million pound player right now, I don't know that I'd agree with it, but it's finally starting to click, which is good news for Poch, right? Because if they had finished, you know, 9th, 10th, maybe even 11th place, you'd hate to say that it's a hot seat, but it's tough to kind of, you know, keep your job at that point. And that's probably good for Chelsea fans, because now if you're bringing in a second manager in, you know, 3 years or whatever, there's probably like their sixth manager in 8 years, like it's, you know, no cohesion. So I think you're likely going to get some consistency now. You likely have a core that you can build around. Like they're probably still going to spend out another 200, 300 million pounds in the summer. Maybe not as much as they had the last four windows, but they're still going to be bringing in probably three, four, you know, good players. They just kind of have to sell a couple of these guys first to meet that like June cutoff point for the, you know, previous year's financial keeping books. So it'll be interesting. I mean, they're going to be, I think we kind of had this discussion on the group chat, and maybe I'll bring it to the pod. Like, you know, do you see Chelsea as a Champions League contender next year?
Yes. I think you made a lot of good points. And before I get into Chelsea, Newcastle thing's interesting. And, you know, what has coincided with this uptick in form? Yes, Isak 100%, but crashing out of Champions League, not having, you know, that's a prime example of, hey, this is a squad that can compete once a week in the Premier League. So good for them. But Chelsea, man, kudos to Scotty, because before the season started, I think it was preseason, we were in the group chat, and Scotty shoots a message and he's like, hey, Cole Palmer is the number one person Nick is going to ask, hey, who is this guy, in about 3 weeks when the season starts. Yeah. And holy shit, did he have a fucking season. So shout out to you for calling that. Like I said, we gotta start celebrating some wins here, because it hasn't been with our picks. So just another thing that you absolutely nailed. To answer your question, Chelsea's the team I would most want to be heading into next year. And I think that's insane to say. And I don't mean of the league, but I'm going to quantify that statement. Obviously, you have Arsenal and City, who are in a class of their own. I put Liverpool in that class as well. We don't know what's going to happen due to Klopp resigning and financial situation, players getting older. Liverpool, I'm cutting them out of this. But if you're talking about the rest of the teams, Villa, Tottenham, Newcastle, United, West Ham, I don't know, does Brighton even still count towards anything? I don't think so. Chelsea could be the best position just because of what Scotty said, right? Their marquee players are performing. They're now starting to gel a little bit. If you're telling me you're going to now have the same manager who, by the way, is a quality proven Premier League manager, you're going to have him for another full season. There's no hot seat talk. There's no bullshit. I think I want to be Chelsea over any of those other teams. And at the end of the day, they're going to spend if they need to. So it's not like this is going to be the exact same squad going into next year. That's an insane thing that I think we're saying, or at least I'm saying, May of 2024. If you asked me this 2 months ago, I'd be like,
yeah,
no.
It depends on how they spend their money in the summer. All right. Like, we know, again, once they get through this June 1st window piece where they have to kind of close the books on the previous financial year, they're probably going to lose Gallagher. Obviously, Thiago Silva's coming off the books. They might lose a couple guys in their quote unquote loan army, but they're going to have guys that are getting healthy. Nkunku had another injury plagued year, and he hasn't really kind of settled in. And that's a guy that we all saw how well he played in the Bundesliga. Coach has probably won countless bets because of him. So you get him back. And then if you get, a couple key pieces, right? The midfield starting to come together between Enzo Fernandez, another 100 million pound midfielder that we have already talked about four times now in this episode. But, maybe a couple of defensive reinforcements and a couple depth pieces, really, but they should be poised to be a solid top four team, especially like you said, Nick. Like, Liverpool, there's going to be question marks about how quickly they adapt to Slot's, system and who moves on from the project and who stays. Van Dijk has kind of mentioned that he's going to stick around, but between Salah and Luis Diaz and some of the other guys, like, you could be losing out on quite a bit and have to replace those guys. Aston Villa, we've seen with West Ham, like, you can have a top four run and then fall off a face of a cliff. So
yeah,
are they going to be there? And then the last one to me, which is almost kind of weird to say, but like Tottenham, again, they started off the season as good as anybody. They were in first place for most of the first 2 months of the season, then had all those injuries. And so they had a really poor run of form. And we kind of gave them, a lot of room there. We said, all right, yeah, you had a really shit run of injuries and you're missing like six of your key guys. Those guys are back now, and they're still losing games. I think they've lost four straight games for the first time in fucking years.
And so, by the way, Tottenham, same goal differential as Chelsea. Yeah, 11 and, goal, 11.
So I 11 think now plus. There's going to be a lot of kind of questions, right? Like, we talked about it last week. Like, would you consider the season a success for Tottenham? And then they go and lose to Liverpool by four goals. They still have City left to go, right? That's probably not going to go too well for them. Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, I don't know what to make of Tottenham coming into this next season. Like, certainly Postecoglou looked like a success, candidate for most of the season. But, what are they going to do? Are they going to go out and, who are they replacing? Are they going to beef up their midfield? Are they going to get more, defensive help? I'm not sure. So I like where Chelsea's going. Weirdly enough, as crazy as to say, 3 months ago, this would have never been even uttered. But I agree with you, Nick. I think they're moving in the right direction, and it doesn't take a whole lot now at this point. Like, they've really overhauled the squad. They've got the manager that seems like he's going to be the right guy and some consistency. It's just like, one or two pieces here and let it go.
Yeah. I have to say, first of all, I had no idea Cole Palmer had 21 goals and 9 assists this season. Like, I haven't looked at any Chelsea box scores recently, and I can't believe he's second in the league, just four behind Haaland. And piggybacking off Scotty's point with some stats here of how much Chelsea's picked up their scoring of late, they now have 70 goals scored on the season. That puts them right up there with the likes of Villa on 73, not far behind Newcastle on 78, Spurs on 69. So they're right in the mix with those teams, and their defense really isn't much worse. They've conceded 59, Newcastle 56, Spurs 58, Villa a little bit better at 53, which is why they have a little bit of a gap between Spurs, Newcastle, and Chelsea. And they've now, they're level on points with United, but form-wise, much better form than United. Similar defensive records, but much better goal-scoring record. So I think they're trending in the right direction under Pochettino. I think with his track record in the Premier League, they're setting themselves up for a successful campaign next season, and top four will definitely be their goal. They're going to spend probably to get there as well, like you guys said. So that's going to put a little bit more of the onus on getting top four than you might see out of some of the other clubs. But yeah, they seem to be setting themselves up for success next season. And, maybe they're in Europa League or something, and they you know, get their feet wet in Europe again and get themselves ready for what they would hope a Champions League campaign the following season in Pochettino's third season. So it has to be said, credit to them. They've really started to turn the season around. And sometimes with a manager like Pochettino, it takes time to get things in order the way
any
he
manager,
wants,
man.
Right? That and the fact they dealt with a lot of injuries early on. Things are trending in the right direction for them. So that's a big one. This week, speaking of United, they are hosting Arsenal. It's a must-win, really, for Arsenal to stay within striking distance of... Oh, and just real quick, top six. I almost forgot. I pulled up the lines for that. Right now, the books are still favoring Newcastle, -225, Chelsea +225. So if you think Chelsea can catch Newcastle, there's a little bit of value in a future over the next three games. Not sure if they'll do it, but it's just a little food for thought if you are a supporter of Chelsea who thinks they can get that done. So I wanted to throw that in there. But moving on to the big game of the weekend is the Arsenal-United match. United is hosting. They are +550 at home. Arsenal -260. United's coming off a horrible loss to Palace this past weekend. And do they have any fight in them to try to stave off Arsenal? Or do they even want to, considering that, you know, we talked about last week how Spurs, are they going to even want to beat City if it doesn't benefit them because you don't want to help Arsenal? Does United want to help City in any way? Like, you know, are they going to go for it all against Arsenal here? Can they get it done? Or do they not want to help City here? Maybe, you know, like, you wonder sometimes with those big rivalries if that dynamic plays into it at all.
Are they willing to help out Arsenal or City, rather? Can they help out City is the question. Do you guys see United this week?
Yeah.
Absolute fucking smack job.
I don't know if they even have what it takes to help out City, like you said.
Kind of my point.
Yeah.
And so they have so many injuries too. Like, just kind of going through, like, here's, like, this is their injury list, right? Harry Maguire sustained a muscle injury, keep him out for about 3 weeks. That was as of, you know, I guess yesterday, May 5th. Lisandro Martinez, he's been out. Varane is out. Shaw is out. Rashford is out. McTominay is out. Bruno Fernandes is out. Anthony Martial, he's unlikely to feature. Lindelof, he's out. Like, that's a crazy list of players for a team that hasn't really been that great to begin with, right? So I think they were playing with, like, Casemiro was playing as, like, a center back in their last game, and then they had Christian Eriksen playing as a holding mid, and it was just, it's not good. So I expect Arsenal to kind of tear them up. You know, if Arsenal can't get two, maybe three goals on this United squad as it's configured, that'd be a massive fuck up on their part. And so the question is, can Arsenal, who has by far the league's best defense, you know, hold United to one or fewer goals, which I certainly think they should. So, I think it's, I don't want to call it a walk in the park, but this is as much of a walk in the park Arsenal have against the Manchester United team at Old Trafford.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're looking at that, Arsenal -1.5 is -105. If you think they can get a two goal victory, two plus goals. If you think they could put up three on United, that's even money. Are either of those attractive to you, or even Arsenal win by two plus is -105?
Are they attractive? I mean, if you need something to bet on, yes. You know, am I going to risk that at this stage? Probably not.
Yeah.
I just, it's, you know, could something weird happen? How United would it be to, you know, lose by four to Crystal Palace and then turn around and get a draw against Arsenal? I don't know.
And I think it's their last game at Old Trafford this season. So there is maybe a little something to be said for that. You know, we always try to find, like, the things that books aren't going to really account for in their lines. And, you know, whether it's a relegation team playing in a home game and getting that extra boost from the crowd, or in this case, maybe just the last home game. I think, you know, there could be a better atmosphere, but, you know, this isn't an Arsenal team that has nothing really left to play for. Like, this is an Arsenal team that must win this game. Like, there is no other alternative. Like, if they get two goals, they're not going to be happy. Like, they're going to score, and they're going to score a lot. Yeah. So I think if anything of those lines that you listed there, coach, maybe over 2.5 team total, that's probably the best of the both of the list there. So, otherwise, you know, could I see this United team somehow lucking their way into a penalty and then, like, a, you know, jammy set piece goal, and now all of a sudden Arsenal win 3-2? Yeah, that's possible. But at least the team total, you know they should be getting minimum of two and a pretty good chance of getting three plus.
Yeah, I agree. I think I kind of like that win by two plus goals. I think they win this match, like you said, with all the injuries United have. And I think they do by multiple goals. I don't know how much I would put on it, but I think that one feels right to me at minus 105. I see why the books have these lines skewed the way they do, so heavily favoring Arsenal. When you see the injury list, the form that United's in, it's tough to see them, you know, being able to do it. Like Nick said, could they pull a rabbit out of their hat at home at Old Trafford against one of their older rivals? It could happen, but I think it's unlikely here. So let's move on to Serie A. Some interesting things there as well. Before we move on to the big match of the weekend, let's talk about last weekend. It was the return of the draw line. 7 draws in 10 matches last weekend. Second time this month that's happened in Serie A. Let's talk about the matchups this week. I mean, when you talk about draw line, is not something we regularly bet. Every once in a while, we'll pull one out and say, like, this feels like a draw, right? But when there's so many draws in a league on a week-to-week basis, it almost feels like we should be maybe looking at draw lines a little more often because you can get pretty good value there a lot of the time. Lots of times. I'm going to read out the fixture list to you guys. Tell me which one, if any, you would peg for a draw. Then we can look at maybe what the number is in that match. So we have Frosinone hosting Inter, Napoli hosting Bologna, Milan hosting Cagliari, Lazio hosting Empoli, Genoa hosting Sassuolo, Verona hosting Torino, Juve hosting Salernitana, Atalanta hosting Roma, Lecce hosting Udinese, Fiorentina hosting Monza.
Yeah, just one of those blindly. Is a cheat code. Yeah, one of those is a cheat code because Udinese draw in over half their matches. So that Udinese Lecce,
plus 225.
That's automatic. That should be our pod lock of the week because that would be crazy.
So go ahead, Scotty.
As I say, other than that, the other one that sticks out to me would be like a Verona Torino, just because we know.
Yep.
I think Verona, now that they're safe, maybe they can kind of relax a little bit. Torino, more so defensive of a team than offensive, although I think their defense this year has been relatively lackluster. So that one I could see being a 0-0, maybe a 1-1.
That's so, a plus 200 draw line.
Pause there, yeah. So what I was going to say, you know, you mentioned we don't often take these lines. I don't think we ever even talk about them. So if anybody's really not familiar with it, a typical draw line, I would say, hovers around plus 300, right? It's a difficult result to predict, to bet on. Yeah. You want something plus 300, you know, plus or minus 30 cents, I would say. The closer, the two games that we talked about are so freaking close to 200. It just goes to show you how the books know and, how much likely they are. Lecce Udinese is plus 205. Verona Torino is plus 195. I mean, those are like absurdly low numbers for a draw line. So just astuteness of the books, astuteness of Scotty calling out games, but just something to keep in mind as you're looking at this market. I think,
the other one I would keep an eye on too is Napoli Bologna plus 245.
Yep. That one, Roma Atalanta.
0-0 draw the first time they met. I could see another 0-0, 1-1 type draw the way. But Bologna, you mentioned Udinese, Scott. Bologna, they draw a lot as well at 9 road draws in 17 matches. So more than half their road matches have been draws. That's kind of how they've been keeping themselves up in the top four, finding those results where maybe other teams don't. So that one, too, at plus 245 is pretty attractive as well.
I think Roma Atalanta is decent. I think Genoa Sassuolo, could you see it? And then does a big team slip up somewhere? I mean, what do you want to do? Let's set an over-under, 5.5 draws for the weekend.
Ooh, 5.5. See, that's a high. I know they've had 7 twice this month, but to me, 5.5 is pretty high. So I'm going to go under. I think you could see 4 or 5 draws. I just don't know.
All right, how about this?
5.5.
Between 4 and 6 draws for the weekend. I'm going to set a group, a band of draws between 4 and 6 for the weekend.
Yeah, I would say so. The thing that I think is working against the draw lines this weekend is that there's a couple of relegation matches where like teams need 3 points. And so maybe in a situation where like in the last 10, 15 minutes, like, you're not committing, center halves all the way forward, or you're not committing your keeper or whatever, like there might be a chance where they're just throwing everything at it. So that's the only thing that I could see maybe upsetting the balance this week compared to the 2 of the last, 3 weeks that we've had.
Yeah, but I think under normal circumstances, I would take the 4-6 draw ban based on the way Seti has been playing lately, because I could see four draws here, but not quick lands.
So here's the thing: if there's four draws and they're all at +200 or better, if you bet every draw line this weekend,
hit two of them, really,
does that make it? Is that makes you money, right?
Good strategy is round robining draws. If you think there's that many, I would say pick six and do like a $5 round robin.
Yeah, because I mean, when you're talking about, I mean, you're gonna probably avoid the 330 on Frosinone and the Milan match at +380. But if you're looking at, I could even see a draw in the Lazio Empoli match, honestly.
Sure.
Right.
I was Empoli more to play for. I didn't want to upset Nick.
Upset me. They blew their any chance they had last week when they drew Monza. So is what it is.
Yeah. So there's definitely, yeah, I don't hate that strategy. If you're looking for like a fun little round robin, I don't hate Nick's little play there. You pick five or six of those matches, round robin them for $5, and maybe you hit a couple.
Yeah, right. If you're doing a $5 round robin on six, you're betting $30, right? I easily see a scenario where you can clear 100.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that is interesting. Scott mentioned the relegation zone teams that maybe will be throwing caution to the wind, which maybe could upset that. Just a quick update on the relegation zone, because we had a couple teams get results that maybe we didn't expect last week. So going back to match day 35, I just want to pull it up here. Lost it here. We had Sassuolo getting a big 1-0 win at home over Inter. Okay, Inter's lost two Serie A matches all season, two, both to Sassuolo, who sits in 19th place.
Makes Coach, sense did you bet both of those games?
I definitely bet the one last week. I had a lock of Inter to score over 2.5 goals because Sassuolo's defense has been absolutely atrocious this year.
I think you had the first one, too.
I may have. I'd have to look back. That was like September, but I don't know. I'm not, you know, going to sit here with my tinfoil cap for too long, but Sassuolo does a lot of business with Inter, Davide Fratesi, among others. So just makes you wonder a little bit if, you know, maybe certain teams were told not to push it too hard. But anyway, speaking of relegation teams, Cagliari, big 1-1 draw against Lecce, Empoli 0-0 with Frosinone. So a point each for those teams as they both sit above the relegation zone. Verona, the big result aside from Sassuolo, was the 2-1 win over Fiorentina. And then Udinese, the draw that Scotty mentioned against Napoli last week there, the draw Kings, they got a point. So the only teams that really got hurt in the relegation zone was nobody, guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, everybody got points.
Everybody got points except for Salernitana, who's already mathematically eliminated. So updating the standings now, we'll go from 14 down, Verona on 34, looking pretty solid with three matches left. Cagliari 33, Frosinone 32, Empoli 32. Then you get the teams that are in the relegation zone, Udinese on 30, Sassuolo on 29, and Salernitana on 15. So it's a big weekend for these teams, big weekend for the relegation teams. Just to give an update there.
Yeah, who plays each other? I mean, let's, right? Lecce Udinese has got to be the game.
And Lecce is pretty safe, so I have a pick in that match later. Okay. I think when you're on 37 with three matches left and you're seven above the relegation zone, you're in pretty good shape. It'd take a catastrophic bunch of results for them to fall into it. You know, Frosinone hosts Inter. That's tough, but we saw what Inter did last week. Empoli's at Lazio. Sassuolo's at Genoa. Verona hosts Torino, which we mentioned. And then it's Udinese at Lecce, like you said, and those are the teams that are really still in it. So nobody, no head-to-heads this week.
It's interesting because if you asked me a week ago, you know, you'd say one of Udinese or Sassuolo are going down, right? It's a certainty. Yeah. And now, well, they're both one win away from being in the safe zone. Just kind of wild.
Potentially, yeah, depending on the results ahead of them. So if you look at Frosinone hosting Inter, you look at Cagliari at Milan, Empoli at Lazio. Those are the teams that really have the tougher matches. Two of the three on the road. Do you see any of those three getting resolved? We'll start there. The teams that are playing maybe the bigger sides in the league.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I'm betting the over or if I'm betting this band of draws, I think one of those three teams can pull out a point. I don't know who it is, but the Milan teams literally have zero to play for.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you look, Yeah, go ahead, Scotty.
I was going to say, but Coach, if you want to subscribe to this, you know, conspiracy theory that you mentioned between Sassuolo and Inter, you know, do you really see Inter throwing one against Frosinone? Would they really continue that trend against lower third table teams?
I don't know. I don't know what business they're doing with Frosinone like they do with Sassuolo. But other sides like Sassuolo at Genoa, Genoa's mid-table, nothing to play for, right? We talk about those kind of matches. Torino, Verona, Torino mid-table, nothing to play for. Lecce, pretty safe. A draw probably does them plenty to stay out of the relegation, probably mathematically puts them out of it. Which of those teams do you see as maybe having the best shot of getting a result, maybe getting a win, let's say a win in this case? I'm thinking possibly Verona, considering they're at home and they're coming off a big win. Maybe they have a little something going for themselves.
They're like not a very big underdog. So that, I mean, you can't say that very often about them.
We're going to rely on that next season as well. Cause we love betting against Verona.
We have one more year to bet against them.
It looks like we'll have another year. It does. All right.
You never guessed who had Fiorentina last week to beat them.
Yeah. Huh. Well, there you go. That says everything you need to know. If you were listening to the pod, you should have known to bet Verona about 5 units on the money line there. So the big one this weekend features my Roma traveling to Bergamo against Atalanta. The winner most likely gets 5th place in this one, especially if Atalanta gets the win. I'd say that they're going to be in really good shape just because they have that match in hand that we talked about last week. Atalanta and Roma both on 60 points. Atalanta's played one fewer match, so they are technically ahead of Roma on goal differential and with that match in hand. If Roma gets the win, they're 3 clear, and Fiorentina's match in hand, Atalanta's match in hand against Fiorentina at most can level it depending on how the other two matches play out this season. And Roma, I believe, would have the head-to-head tiebreaker because they drew the first match. So interesting match. And the other caveat is both teams play Thursday in Europa League. Atalanta hosting Marseille in a 1-1, after 1-1 draw in France. Roma going to Leverkusen after losing 2-0 to the German champs. So when you think of approach for this match, obviously, I don't think Roma mails it in on Thursday. I think they're going to, try. It's only 2-0, right? But I think from a pride standpoint, you're not going to just mail it in at 2-0. It's not like it was a 5-0 or something. But point being, Roma can say at halftime, if maybe it's up to 3-0, you pull Dybala or you pull Lukaku or somebody, Pellegrini, because you have your eye toward this match on Sunday, knowing that this is then your best route to Champions League through the league. Whereas Atalanta in a 1-1 is at home, going to be favored against Marseille. Chance to get to a European final, which is, I don't think they've ever done their history, Nick, unless I'm forgetting something, right? So I think they probably have to expand a little more energy on Thursday. I don't know how much that plays into Sunday. And if we look at the lines for this one, let's pull it up.
Atalanta's even money.
Atalanta's
Roma
even,
plus 245.
Yeah. 245 draw line plus 235. Pretty decent numbers on Roma, draw no bet, and double chance in this one, plus 155. And the double chance was, I think, around minus 130. I just got to switch tabs here. Minus 135. So, Scotty, I'll start with you because, you're used to having your team play deep into European competitions. Liverpool ended up losing deep into European competition this year earlier than we expected to this Atalanta side. Do you think Thursday plays a lot into this match on Sunday? What do you think of this from that perspective and just from what you've seen from these two teams?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, like you said, like neither team are going to be resting or rotating. And Roma, you're down a goal and you're going away to a team that hasn't lost yet this season, right?
Bayern 48 matches.
So you're not going to roll over, right? That would just be ridiculous. So I think both teams are going to give it a lot. I think the good news is, it's not like Germany is that deep of a trip. You're not going to, I guess, and for Italy, it's a little different. When we're talking about Premier League, you don't want to go to Serbia. You don't want to go to the far east part of Europe and then have to come back that same night before you have a big matchup like this. So, I don't know that it's going to play too much into it. It does help, that you get to have a home game, so you're not really traveling, but the momentum is key, right? Now, if you tell me Roma lose that game and Atalanta win theirs, I think there's a little bit more momentum that Atalanta will carry into this match, and that can, have some significant impacts. And you know, even looking at their form right now, Atalanta, you know, unbeaten in their last five.
Yep.
Roma not doing as well, right? They've draw, you know, they obviously lost to Bayern, and then they drew Napoli. They did beat Udinese, but, you know, 2-1 win over Udinese is not exactly a one to write home about. So, and then they had that loss to Bologna that was kind of demoralizing. So it's, if you, for the lack of a better term, if you want to do a vibes check right now, if Atalanta advance and Roma do not, like, vibes are gonna be really tough for the Roma squad. And, you know, I know De Rossi's a new manager, and I think that's a challenge to kind of keep your team focused this late in the season with still a lot to play for when you're, you know, kind of been dealt a couple heartbreaking losses in a short period of time. So I think that more than anything, not so much like the rest or you know, having to travel is going to be more important. It's just like, you know, if Roma can even get some form of result, like even if you, you know, have like a hard fought, you know, game and you don't come out on top because it goes to extra time or something like that yeah. almost is better for momentum than if you go to Leverkusen and, you know, you get beat 3-0
or 2-0 again. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that's tough. That's a tough one. So I think that the momentum here is going to be key. And I think, you know, the results of Thursday's matches more than anything is going to probably give you a little bit more insights onto what to expect when they face off this weekend.
Yeah. You guys nailed pretty much most of the talking points. I have maybe a little bit of a different view than rosy eyed coach over there who always thinks the best of his squad and hopes for the best. And I appreciate that. It's nice to have a team that's been consistently winning and competing. So I'll give you kudos.
We were just making fun of Roma and their bonsai tree like less than a year ago.
I know, but
consistently winning.
No, but they're, yeah. I mean, they've been in the semifinals of European competition for what, 5 straight years?
I think 4 in a row, 5 out of 6.
Okay. So, I mean, that's more than I can say, even though they pretty much came up empty handed in most of them. So, Scotty's kind of right here. Listen, you said you're going to go and not bend over for Bayer. Well, you're not, you know, that's, I don't know that that's by choice or not, right? 2-0 might as well be 12-0 as far as I'm concerned. Nobody's gone there. Nobody's gotten a result as in won a game. So, you know, to say that Roma's going to be the first to do it, I'd be really fucking impressed, just to be honest with you, right? The Roma, their form hasn't been good. I don't know if it's fatigue. I don't know what it is, but it seems like guys are injured. Guys are getting pulled early, game in and game out. And Atalanta's going in exactly the opposite direction. They have 7 straight games in the league where they've scored 2 goals or more. They've won their last 3. They have just looked good, right? Obviously, what they did to Liverpool, they're going to be at home, so they don't have to travel. Couldn't be 2 teams on opposite form. I think the odds are the way they are for a reason. If I were betting a team, it has to be Atalanta at home at even money. I think that's actually a steal. And like you said, coach, a win pretty much solidifies that 5th place, even gives them a shot at 4th, you know, for this game. So all things are in a bad direction for Roma. Now, that being said, have they surprised us in the past? Absolutely. Have they outperformed maybe their expectations or hit their expectations since the OSC took over? Absolutely. Can they do it again? Sure. But you know, what kind of performance are you getting from Dybala on short rest, a game where he was pulled, right? This past week against Juve, he was pulled early. Lukaku, inconsistent. Tammy, obviously coming off of injury, has not found the form yet. Pellegrini has really not looked good in the past month and a half, right? He had those 3 or 4 games early on when De Rossi took over where everybody's like, oh my God, he's back. Hasn't done anything since. So they're not getting anything off the bench, really, right? El Shaarawy's looked pretty poor. The other dude, the Azmoun, is that his name? Azmoun? What's his name?
The Iranian dude?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Azmoun.
He's been okay. I think Baldanzi finally had his first really good game last week. So, like, there's nobody, you know, if you're not getting a full 90 from Dybala, I don't know how they get a result in this game. And I don't know that you get a full 90 on him on short rest. So Roma would really, really impress me with, I'm going to say, even 2 points out of their next 2 games with Bayer and with Atalanta here.
There's almost the one differentiating factor here is that midweek after this match, Roma don't have anything. But Atalanta have the final, the Coppa Italia final against Juve.
Oh,
so if anything, there might be an eye on that. Yeah. That's like the one thing that I'll maybe Roma gets the advantage.
And hey, listen, that's what they have to figure out, what they want to prioritize from here on out, right? You have a chance at a final here. You have a chance to win a cup. But man, you know, fourth or fifth place guarantees you all of those things anyway. So what do you prioritize? I mean, I don't know. When was the last time Atalanta didn't give a top four team a tough game?
Yeah, and I think the best case scenario for Roma, if we're assuming they're going to go out, which I think even the optimist in me thinks it's very unlikely they get a result and win by two goals at Leverkusen, right? If Tammy had put in that chance in stoppage time in the second half and they got out of there 2-1 on Thursday, then I think there's a little hope that maybe Roma can eke out a 1-0 or something like that and force extra time or whatever. Maybe best case scenario for Roma is Marseille plays Atalanta to a draw through 90 minutes, so that even if Atalanta goes through, they have to fight for 120 minutes. Maybe that's best case for Roma. And then they have to look ahead to Coppa Italia. Maybe, you know, Gasperini has some choices to make with some tired legs. But yeah, I mean, there's a reason why Atalanta's favorite at home. Me, as the Roma fan, will probably take a shot at that draw, no bet, or double chance, just because I believe my squad can get it done.
Don't forget team total, Steve.
Yeah, I played it against Juve the other day, and when they scored pretty early, I was like, oh, this is looking pretty good. And they should have really gotten a second goal in that match. They really should have, looking at the chances they had. And it just didn't pan out. But the team total is at plus 180, I just saw. So who knows? Maybe if I have a bonus bet sitting around somewhere, maybe I'll take a stab at it, because I do like to play that. But I don't know if we see a lot of, like, the first matchup was 1-1 between these two teams. A lot of the times in the past we've seen, you know, 2-2s and things like that. I don't know if we get that or not, but.
Want to just cut to my locks? I could tell you.
Yeah.
Sounds like we're about to.
Yeah, let's get to those locks. So we mentioned it last week, not our best week, 3-4-3, but we're going to go back at it. Nick, I know it's usually Scotty kicking off. Why don't you kick us off, since you do have a pick in this match?
Yeah, listen, first let me apologize to the listeners, or give the listeners the best advice I possibly can. It's time to fade me. I think I went 0-3 2 weeks ago. I went 0-1 with two pushes, so 0-2-1, 0-1-2 last week. I don't know the week before, but I think I'm on like a 7 or 8 game winless streak here. Not good. So now's the time to just fade Scott and myself, and you can make some money.
Whoa. I've been winning. I've had a winning record the last 3 weeks.
You've carried the pot. That's true.
Season wrong, but I've been doing okay the last 3 weeks.
We flip flopped here, but I think didn't mean to. But the pick in this game is actually over 2.5. It's minus 120. It's for all the reasons we talked about, right? Both of these teams will be on exceptionally short rest. Both of these teams need points, preferably 3 points. And both of them have been pretty clutch for us this year. So, you know, 3 goals is, I think, what the doctor ordered in this match. And it was in my notes, but he's going to do it. He already told you. I said, I'm kind of shocked coach did not take Roma draw no bet as one of his locks.
I just don't want to be the jinx of my team yet again. It's happened a couple times recently.
I promise you, I don't want to be the reason. You betting on them or not will not impact the result.
Disagree, but that's fine. All right. I will go next, so I'll take the second spot here. My first lock of the week, I'm going Fulham versus Manchester City and the rarely taken both teams to score no draw line at plus 105. This is basically the same bet that I kind of did last week with the Wolves over half a goal team total against Manchester City, which hit. This one's a little bit different, just trying to get a little bit more juice on this. I think we all would agree that City are going to smack Fulham in this one, right? Again, they're also in a must-win situation, because as long as they keep winning games, they'll win the title. But if they drop points, then that opens the door for Arsenal. So I think this is a foregone conclusion. City's going to win this one by a handful of goals. Interestingly enough, the total here is over 3.5 at minus 115. City team total is over 3.5 at plus 190. So the odds suggest here that Fulham are going to get on the board. I think Fulham's team total is like minus 155, minus 160. So as long as Fulham get one, I think you're going to get both teams to score, and I would be stunned if City drop points. I think they're actually like plus 1,000 on the money line for this one. So, or Fulham's plus 1,000 on the money line for this one. So I'm just trying to finesse a similar bet to what I had last week into a plus money line. So I'm going to take the both teams to score, no draw, plus 105.
All right, so my first one is in Serie A. I know it's a game Nick also has a bet in, so maybe he could piggyback off of this one, but it's Bologna double chance at Napoli, minus 135. Bologna's been underwhelming of late with draws of 4 or 5. That being said, the Rossoblu haven't lost in 7 straight. Conversely, Napoli hasn't won in 4. I think Bologna continues with their specialty of road draws, which we mentioned before. They have 9 and 17, so I'm taking the double chance. I think they can at least get the draw here at minus 135.
Yeah, I want to agree with you. Bologna's been good, but they just haven't been able to get over the line. And that's kind of why I'm going over 2.5 in this one. I think they are, Scotty, say it with me, they are
due.
They're so due. And I think Napoli's due. Field game, right? So Napoli needs something, right? Absolutely. They gave up, what, a 94th minute goal in a game that they were cruising in last week. To drop 2 points. Bologna is unbeaten in 7, but, you know, like I said, not too many wins. I have to imagine both of these teams go balls to the wall. You know, it'd be really tough for Bologna to slip out of, like, you know, 4th or 5th at this point, but it's not impossible. So I think we have to get 3 goals in this one. I just could, you know, I see a 2-1 game one way or the other. I hope it's in Bologna's favor for sure, but I can't imagine this isn't a back and forth ping pong game. It has to be.
Yeah. To be fair, I will say they're due for your sake, but I also have to remind the folks that I am firmly in the Napoli or trash section of the internet. So
you led the charge. Here, another win we could hang our hat on.
I don't truly believe it. If Napoli never score again, it wouldn't surprise me. So that's my official stance on this pod. All right. Speaking of scoring, my second pod lock or second lock for the podcast, Chelsea moneyline at Forest. So we kind of discussed at the top of the episode, Chelsea, arguably one of the hottest teams outside of the two title candidates in Arsenal and City. Forest won big last weekend. They got a 3-1 win against Sheffield United that pretty much puts them safe. I think they have a 3-point lead over Luton Town with 2 to go and a massive goal differential advantage. So, you know, unless Luton Town get 4 points in the next 2 matches, Forest will be okay. So I think they're going to take the foot off the gas a little bit here. And even though they're at home, I think there's a big opportunity for Chelsea to kind of continue this winning streak and, you know, maybe finish the season strong. And like we said, you know, set themselves up for a solid start to the next season. So I'll take Chelsea's offense. You know, they're going to keep it rolling and get another W to add to that list.
Yeah, I like it with the form they're in. Minus 105 feels for sure. Feels pretty good at Forest there. All right, so I'm going with one of the relegation teams we talked about earlier. I'm going Udinese draw no bet at Lecce minus 105. Udinese have gotten back-to-back draws against Bologna, Napoli edge closer to safety. Now they travel to the Lecce side with little fear of relegation. I think Udinese can get the job done on the road and will take I will take the protection of the two-way money line as they desperately try to climb out of the bottom 3. The draw line's very attractive too. After we talked about it, but I had this one in there, and I'm going to ride with it and just take the protection against the draw.
Old strategy. I think it's the first pick all year on Udinese, right?
Probably for them. Yes. Yeah.
I just right. Sorry. That piece of it.
Yeah.
As long as you get that draw protection, I'm okay with it.
Always. I already forgot which 2 games I spoke about. All right, I'm going for the over 2.5 trifecta. Genoa taking on Sassuolo, minus 115. This is one of the last 3 weeks this year we will be able to cash in on Sassuolo's awful defense. It is the worst. Over 2.5 in 6 out of 7 head-to-head. Let's ride that streak. Genoa's newfound goal-scoring form. Over 2.5, minus 115. Across the board.
We didn't get to cash on their awful D last week. Just, you know, hopefully this week that goes back to normal.
All right, my third and final lock for the weekend. I'm going back to my favorite parlay special. I'm taking Tottenham moneyline at Burnley, or excuse me, versus Burnley, and Arsenal moneyline at Manchester United. If you parlay the two London clubs together, you're going to get minus 105. I think Tottenham are due for an easy win here. They did get smacked by Liverpool, but it's their final home game of the season. Burnley are already relegated. They got nothing left to play for. We talk about morale, and we talk about, you know, vibes. Burnley going to be at an all-time low. Really disappointing season from them. I think they came in as the winners of the championship last season, and we had high hopes for them because they were scoring goals and they had their their record or history of being a strong defensive team, and neither really came to fruition this season. So I think this will be an easy one for Tottenham to win, you know, send the fans home happy as their last home match of the season. On the other side, we already talked about Arsenal United. I think Arsenal easily win this game. You know, United walking wounded, just got smacked by Palace. So, you know, if Arsenal can't get a win here, then, you know, that's probably as demoralizing of a loss and finish of a season as you can imagine. So I think two London clubs get two very easy wins, parlay them together at minus 105, and don't ask questions.
All right, I'm going to finish out my locks with Verona, draw no bet, versus Torino at even money. Verona's won 2 of 3, including a big win over Fiorentina last weekend, as we mentioned. Torino's your classic mid-table team with little to play for and likely will just be playing out the season over the last few weekends. I think Hellas will be more motivated and find a way at home to stay out of the relegation zone with a win. And 3 points probably, you know, gets them pretty much out of it for good.
Not only did the coach take the first bet for Udinese this year, he took the first bet for Hellas this year.
You know, it's been a rough couple of weeks, so I'm going with the counterintuitive approach.
Counterintuitive. I love it. Yeah. Speaking of, why don't we talk about the pod lock? And we are unbanning a Juventus game for the second week in a row, pushed last week, but we are fading Juve this time. Salernitana +2.25 goals, -120 at Juventus. I will give you the logic in 7 words or less. Juve has not won by 3 goals or more since January 21st. Full stop.
Love it.
A little more than 7 words, but
yeah, I added words. I read it and I was like, oh, that's only 7. Then I just got excited. Sorry. I did the Charles Barkley where like, oh, I'm saying 2 words. And he said like 12.
So that's we have bets on 1, 2, 3. And if you count the successful over 4 matches featuring teams fighting relegation in Italy. So that's where we're heading to try to get
what
out of
the wrong. We're in.
The Kicks and Picks podcast experience.
What's the worst that can happen? All right. So we thank you guys for listening and riding with us throughout the season and through the highs and the lows. We have a couple weeks left, and we're going to look to bring some winners to the table over the last few weeks before we start looking at the international tournaments that are coming.